The Tom Woods Show, episode 474.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. You know what I love? Getting paid for things I'm going to do anyway. So I just joined Ebates because I get cash back for purchases I'm going to make anyway. Sign up through tomwoods.com/Ebates and get a free $10 gift card. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. Joined once again by Lou Rockwell. We're going to talk today about the Donald Trump phenomenon, which I did not see coming at all. Yes, I knew he was likely to run, but I had no idea what the effect of it would be. So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting phenomenon. We're not endorsing Donald Trump, obviously. We're just very, very interested in this phenomenon, that the establishment trots out Jeb Bush, and meanwhile, Jeb Bush has been left completely in the dust. That's an interesting phenomenon for somebody who is interested in following this stuff, as Lou and I are. Of course, you all know who Lou Rockwell is. He is the publisher of LouRockwell.com, which I look at every day. He is the founder and chairman of the Mises Institute, which did so much for my own personal intellectual development. I cannot recommend it to you highly enough. Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org. And he is the former chief of staff to Ron Paul. Lou, welcome back to the show.
Tom, great to be with you, and especially on this topic.
Normally, I have at least some notes I scribble out, I read some articles, I prepare myself, I get some questions formulated, and then when the thing gets going, it tends to be spontaneous, but at least I've got some backup. I got no backup here at all. I just think, I'm talking to Lou Rockwell about Donald Trump. I think that's going to carry us through. Let's lead with this item that is from several days ago now about two different events that were held in New Hampshire, town hall events, one with Jeb Bush and one with Donald Trump. Let's start with that because it's emblematic of what's going on in this race. What happened?
Well, Bush had been planning this town hall meeting for weeks, and 128 people showed up, mostly older people, a very quiet crowd. And Trump, at the last minute, decided he was going to compete with Jeb and have a town meeting at the same time, same day, a few miles away. More than 2,000 people showed up for his, and that was all that could fit. There was a big overflow, and he was teasing Jeb all through it, noting that he's a very low-energy guy, that, as he warns journalists, if you interview him, you're going to fall asleep. Also, Trump has said earlier on about Jeb, he's a very sad man. Clearly, he doesn't want to be running for president, and clearly, he shouldn't be running for president.
You remember Fred Thompson? His heart was obviously not in it, and it seems like he threw his hat in the ring just almost by default. Everyone was telling him to do it, saying it was inevitable, he was going to do great. So he did it. He had zero enthusiasm. I remember one event where he actually had to prod the audience to applaud him. It was really bad.
And this guy's a movie actor.
You're not necessarily cut out for this, either because you're a movie actor or because people think there's an inevitability surrounding your candidacy. And I think that's what makes the Trump phenomenon so interesting, is that Jeb Bush was obviously the establishment's pick. You don't raise $100 million for your PAC because you're an insurgent candidate who's going to shake things up. I mean, he's the safe candidate who has all the safe opinions on everything. And here is Trump not only crushing the guy, but laughing at and ridiculing the establishment's choice. That does not happen. People don't do that. Now, I recognize that to an extent, Trump himself obviously is part of the establishment, but not to the point where he was going to sit back and let Jeb Bush just take things. He makes fun of Jeb Bush. You don't do that. He's breaking all the rules.
Well, it's true, and it's also, as our great teacher and friend Murray Rothbard would point out to us if he were here today, it's no coincidence that all the official candidates are boring. They're unbelievably boring. And in fact, I'm just going to read a short quote from a speech that Murray gave in 1992 called A Strategy for the Right.
Love that speech.
It's important to realize that the establishment doesn't want excitement in politics. It wants the masses to continue to be lulled to sleep. It wants kinder, gentler. It wants the measured, judicious, mushy tones and contents of a James Reston, a David Broder, a Washington Week in Review. It doesn't want to pat Buchanan not only for the excitement and hard edge of his content, but also for his similar tone and style. So this is a clue into why the entire establishment hates the guts of Donald Trump, also fears Donald Trump. It's not supposed to be like this. It's supposed to be Kasich and Jeb and Walker and all these other sleep-inducing figures up on a stage blabbing about, you know, some policy issue, keeping everybody calm. A guy like Trump actually, even though he's, as we would be the first to agree, no libertarian, it's why he actually is capable in a much more extreme way than has happened so far in totally shaking up the political and the media establishment. And that's necessary to reform. The dead hand of the establishment is on our throats. Their boot is on our face. And if we want change for the better, first we have to pry the boot off. Donald Trump is doing that.
I'm going to link to that Rothbard speech, A Strategy for the Right, on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/474, because that's the first thing I ever read by Rothbard, was the excerpt from that, at least, that they ran in National Review. They ran the excerpt that was all about Bill Buckley, of course. So there's nothing else interesting Rothbard would have to say. What does he have to say about Bill Buckley? But that's what first got my attention. I thought, who is this Rothbard that he basically thinks Buckley is a sellout and whatever, and Buckley was my hero at that time. So that really got my attention. So I'd love for people to read that whole piece. Now, bearing in mind, I want to make clear, because I've gotten in some, and I shouldn't be doing this, Lou. I'm too busy, but sometimes I'll get on your Facebook page and I'll wind up arguing with people who say, Lou, why are you supporting Trump? You don't understand Lou Rockwell at all if you think he's quote unquote supporting Trump in the sense that we think it would be great to have Donald Trump as president. We would be deploring him as much as we deplore anybody else, but we're political analyst to some degree, or at least we're observers of the scene, and we find this an interesting phenomenon. And there is at least a moderate chance that on a couple of issues, there's a chance Trump could be marginally better. Now, he'd be catastrophic in some areas. On trade, he's terrible, but it goes to show what a rotten job the other Republicans have done in promoting the idea of free trade. They've done a terrible job. They don't even try to defend their position on it, and he's coming in and exploiting that. But when it comes to foreign policy, I would say there's at least a moderate chance he could be slightly better.
And I think they're all bad on trade. You know, the NAFTA and Trans-Pacific deal and all these things, they don't believe in free trade any more than Donald Trump believes in free trade. They believe in crony trade. They believe in government-managed trade for the benefit of the big corporations in cahoots with the government. Only Ron Paul, of any political figure I can think of, is actually for real 100% unilateral free trade, no tariffs, no quotas, no nothing. Trump is, of course, wrong and terrible on a bunch of stuff. So are they all. So what I'm interested in is, where is he different? And also, of course, as you point out, where can he shake things up? Because I think that's necessary. It's also so much fun. I mean, I've always found politics interesting in the sort of train wreck sense, even though I don't believe in politics. After all, politics is part of the government. Elections are part of the government. Political parties are government institutions. So needless to say, I'm not in favor of any of them. But because I was maybe a very young kid involved heavily in politics, I still find it extremely interesting. But now, for the first time since Ross Perot, who Murray Rothbard also was enjoying, or Pat Buchanan, Murray Rothbard also enjoyed, me too in both cases, finally there's a candidate who is really shaking things up, bugging everybody. And I don't say this is 100% true, but pretty much everybody who's paranoid about Trump is not anybody you want having any control over you.
Well, yeah, of course, that's true. And let's take an example of one of those. There are so many, but a personal favorite of mine is Frank Luntz. Now, Frank Luntz is a personal favorite of mine because I actually got to know him years ago. He had a fellowship at the Kennedy School of Government when I was an undergraduate at Harvard. And I was part of the Republican Club at that time. And I remember we were going to put a controversial plank through that was perfectly good and sound, and through the Republican Club. And Luntz showed up because I thought he was on our side. He showed up and denounced it and said that we need to be more mainstream and respectable and this and that. I thought, we're finally trying to do something hard-edged at the Harvard Republican Club of all places, and Luntz shows up and screws everything up. Couldn't stand this guy. And I thought, well, Harvard Kennedy School of Government Fellows is where washed-up people come to, disappear forever. I had no idea he was just getting started, that I'd be seeing him on TV all the time. Well, he expects to run his focus groups and have everybody genuflect and bow down to him. He's the expert. And to be basically called a loser by Donald Trump is the exact opposite of how His Majesty Frank Luntz expects to be treated.
You know, it's interesting. The focus group that he ran for Fox, Trump thought it was a setup. Certainly seemed to be a setup. I mean, you had these people who allegedly were all pro-Trump before the debate, and then after the debate, they were all denouncing him. He's no good. He's a bum. Get rid of him. But of course,
how was he different after the debate than before? He was just saying the things he'd been saying all along.
But also, that was not the reaction of the audience. The audience liked Trump and felt that Fox's attack on him was a bad thing. But no, I've known Frank. I remember when he was hired by the Buchanan for President campaign as a pollster. And I thought, holy smokes, that's not a good sign. And it wasn't a good sign. This guy is, of course, a very repellent neoconservative, a guy who's just a big government guy across the board, a pro-war, and no wonder he's at Fox. But when he denounced Trump, and I notice, because he pretends to be the disinterested scientist, only concerned with the numbers and not having opinions himself, he denounced Trump at the recent CokeCon meeting in California pretty nastily. And Trump said, Frank Luntz, he's a fat slob. He said he's...
that's what it was.
He said he came to me and he wanted me to pay him to do polling and I wouldn't do it. And so now he's attacking me. So, of course, apparently Trump, pretty much everybody has gone to Trump for money.
Yeah.
And he either gave it to them or didn't. But it's very funny when he can say that about everybody. Of course, he's very quick, very smart. A good friend of ours, who I won't mention, who's not a fan of Trump's, but is in that same orbit, told me this last weekend at the Ron Paul birthday party that Donald Trump is extremely smart. This man is extremely smart, too. So it was not a surprise to me, but I was glad to hear it. He's very quick and very smart.
Yeah. And that's become clearer. I mean, at first they wanted to say he's a clown and this and that, but he's a clown because he doesn't just give canned, boring speeches about nothing. Now, granted, they're not speeches I would give, and I wish he'd say different things from the things he's saying, but the fact that he is spontaneous and he's not measuring his words according to focus groups, as the rest of them obviously are, and as they all expected that that's all they have to do, memorize what the focus groups say they want to hear and go out and say it, I mean, that to me is fun to watch. That is thrilling to watch. I will say one quick thing about Frank Luntz. The one thing in his favor is I did hang around with him quite a bit when he was on campus before I realized what a snake he was. And in fact, when he first moved into his apartment, I went to help him buy a rug. I just got to know him. And the thing that he was known for at that point, this was 92, 93, was that he had worked for Pat Buchanan. That was the thing everybody asked him about. Hey, you worked for Pat Buchanan? Who would be, not really very welcome at Harvard University. And I have to say, he never said an unkind word about Pat. He always said, Pat Buchanan is the nicest person I ever worked for. I never had any problems with Pat. So, for all his problems, I still love Pat. And so I do respect that one thing about Frank Luntz. But on the Trump thing with Iraq, that's an interesting thing that he could say on the debate stage, not worrying that he's gonna measure his words, or if I mention Iraq, I have to say something about the surge or whatever. No, he said, I told all you people this was going to be extremely destabilizing and stupid. And of course, I was totally right about it. And he has also said, even though, yes, like other people, in the past, he's not a perfect non-interventionist. He's not even a non-interventionist. But he has said, obviously, our men are being ground up in totally pointless wars that make no sense. Well, that needs to be said. Again, I recognize all his problems. I don't need to get all the emails from people. But at least somebody is saying that on the stage, saying it clearly, and it's not hurting him in the polls any. It's obviously not hurting. He's almost doubled the guy who's right behind him. So it turns out that just measuring your words and saying the right thing and so on, turns out that was a stupid strategy.
And he said, I'm the only guy on this stage who opposed the Iraq war.
Yeah.
I thought it would be a very bad idea, and it turned out to be a very bad idea. I want to say that I also agreed with Frank Luntz about Pat Buchanan. You would never know this from the press it gets, but everybody loves Pat, people on the left, people on the right, people of no political views. He really is a very sweet guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm not surprised that also it's not a good idea, to attack your previous clients if you're in business and hoping to get future ones.
Yeah, right. And at least Luntz knows that much. And I remember even when Pat was at, of all places, MSNBC, people would come to him for advice. You know, Pat, what do you think I ought to do about such and such? Because they knew he had such a good strategic mind. Even though he had views that they didn't like, they could sit down with him and he would give them good advice. And that's always been true. I feel that way about you, Buchanan, and Roger McCaffrey. Those are the three people in the world when I really need advice. I think if I can get advice from one of those three people, I know it'll be the right thing to do.
Oh, well, that's very high praise. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
But also, Trump has never talked about foreign policy. The people who are the real warmongers, the people who really just are itching for blood.
It's all they talk about.
It's all they talk about. It's, or at least it's one of the things they always talk about. And we're supposed to be... You know, there's an article in the new Weekly Standard by Bill Kristol, who's, I guess, the head of Neoconservatism Inc. at the moment, and it's about horrible Trump. Scott Walker is the kind of candidate we want to have. Now, take a look at this wonderful speech he gave about what should replace Obamacare, where he goes through really all the. And of course, you can't even read the next paragraph. I mean, the thing is, like Walker himself, unbelievably boring. And I must say it's a particular enjoyment to me that Scott Walker is the anointed candidate of the Coke machine. And it's another great thing that Obama has done. Excuse me, Obama. It's another great thing that Trump has done. He's diminished magically and wonderfully Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers. Just recently it was, who's going to get their money? Who's going to get their support? All the candidates were salaaming them and saluting them and trying to get their money and their support. Who is he? You know, he's even put Barack Obama in the shade. Somebody wrote me yesterday, said he really already is the president. He's like the private president. Everybody pays far more attention to him than any politician.
What about this complaint that he has a lot of bravado and a lot of funny speeches, but he's long on rhetoric and short on policies? We want his policy papers. Why isn't he producing policies? Now, what's your response to that? Because I can think of two ways of thinking about that. On the one hand, I can see a point to that objection in that there is a kind of Teddy Roosevelt aspect to Trump, and that's not a compliment. That, look, I'm the representative of the people, and you got to just trust that I'll exercise my judgment in a way that will benefit the people. And I could easily see him issuing a million executive orders because he's Donald Trump and these people in Congress are idiots. I can easily see that happening, and I would like to see him kind of hemmed in by what he's going to do. But on the other hand, these policy papers are not worth the paper they're written on, right? They're produced by, again, specialists in snowing the people. They get thrown in the trash can as soon as the person steps into office. They don't actually wind up meaning anything anyway.
Policy is a synonym for lie. That's all you have to know. Anytime anybody's talking about a policy, they're lying. So I don't think this is a problem at all. As to his speeches, I love the fact that the other day he said nobody running for president should be allowed to use a teleprompter.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he gives extemporaneous speeches, and as versus speeches written by somebody else for him to deliver. So, you know, it seems to me you kind of have to like that. There are people who accuse him of being a potential dictator. I talked to David Gordon about this and other people who know far more than I do. None of us can think of a businessman who's ever been a dictator. Now, of course, that's not proof that a businessman can't be a dictator. But since all American presidents have been dictators since Franklin Roosevelt and then, of course, Lincoln and Wilson before that, would he be worse than George W. Bush or Barack Obama? He could be much better in the fact that he's not controlled. He's actually capable of doing something radical and good. Or maybe he'll just be as bad as John Kasich. That's a possibility too. But are we really supposed to fear him more than Jeb Bush? I think not. So I don't mind the fact that he's just laying out a broad program that he would like to see established. But again, you know, he would have to get through things through Congress. I hope nobody becomes president, by the way. But anybody who is president, you can't just, even at the present stage, you can't just do it all by yourself. So I think also people believe him. It's the Ron Paul factor too. When people hear him speak, they think he believes this. Now, of course, Ron is a great intellectual and a great man in every sense. So I don't want to compare him to Trump, but people think Trump is authentic. People believe that he believes what he's saying. Doesn't mean he's right, but they like that. But they know that they can't believe anything that the rest of the politicians say. So no wonder they find him refreshing. I noticed that he's was going to have a big rally in Mobile, Alabama on Friday. And immediately he was criticized. What? This is nuts, going to Alabama when you're always supposed to spend all your time in Iowa and New Hampshire. But I thought, well, it's I don't know why he's doing it, but it's interesting. So, of course, first of all, it turns out they keep growing out of the venue that he's going to be in. Now they're going to rent a football stadium for him to speak at on 5:30 in Mobile, Alabama on Friday. So there's something happening in this country. It's driving the elites bananas. It's bringing up issues like it's got Jeb Bush complaining about anchor babies. I mean, it's quite amazing to see all these guys try to turn Trumpian, and because they do the polling, they know what the people are wanting, and they know that they are all being rejected. Doesn't matter that Jeb Bush has got $100 million. Doesn't matter that Scott Walker is endorsed by the Kochs. Doesn't matter that Sheldon Adelson loves Marco Rubio. Maybe these are all negatives, as indeed they should be negatives.
Lou, I'm thoroughly enjoying this conversation, but let's just pause for a moment for this message. Hey, everybody, if you're like me, you do a lot of shopping online, and you also like free money. Well, combine those two together, and you get Ebates. Join it through tomwoods.com/Ebates, and you get cash back through over 1,800 retailers. So that means every time you shop online at Target or Walmart or Lowe's or Home Depot or JCPenney or Groupon or Best Buy or Overstock.com or Dell or Nike or Nordstrom or all these other retailers, you get cash back just for existing. Now, don't use it for Amazon. For Amazon, you're going to enter Amazon through tomwoods.com/Amazon to help keep the lights on here at the Tom Woods Show. But for the other 1,799 retailers, claim your cash back. And to sweeten the deal, sign up through tomwoods.com/Ebates and get a free $10 gift card. This is money you're leaving on the table. Get out there and grab it. tomwoods.com/Ebates. It's interesting you mentioned the anchor baby thing. I sometimes see libertarians who think that it's a libertarian position that you have to interpret the 14th Amendment as mandating anchor babies. In other words, that somebody is born in the U.S., even if their parents are illegal, they're automatically citizens. Why would a libertarian have a position on citizenship, which is a total state policy which wouldn't even exist without the state, and especially when what it means is that you're entitled to all kinds of special benefits and affirmative action and all kinds of state state-led goodies that you get that other people don't get? I don't see why a libertarian would support that. Ron Paul was correct to be against that. But yeah, of course, that's not an issue anybody's supposed to talk about. We're supposed to talk about so-called public policy and this and that. Why do you think, maybe it's related to the point you just made, why do you think it doesn't stick when the objection is made that Trump supported Hillary in the past or said kind words about this one or said that he identified as more as a Democrat? Why is that not sticking to him?
Well, because they believe him when he says he doesn't have that view anymore. And also, of course, when he said the nice thing about Hillary, she was the senator from New York. He was a businessman in New York. You can't, if you're going to be a successful big businessman, you can't needle the senator. That's because, of course, the state has such unbelievable power at the federal and state and local levels. So, you know, I think did he... And maybe Hillary, if you were to meet Hillary at a party, maybe she's a nice lady. I mean, you can't rule that out. Certainly Bill Clinton comes across as a great guy if you meet him. even though he isn't. So, I think, again, because people think he's telling the truth. They thought he was telling the truth then. They think he's not necessarily truth with a capital T, but just that that's the way he felt then. This is the way he feels now. And another thing I love about him, he's totally destroyed political correctness. They call him a racist for his immigration position. They call him a sexist, misogynist for being upset at Megyn Kelly. It just bounces off. I mean, he definitely is the Teflon candidate. And I think he's dramatically diminished the whole political correctness business. I mean, just the fact that when he was asked about what would he do if Black Lives Matters came to him, which now it turns out, of course, is founded and run by a white guy. So we'll see what happens to Black Lives Matter given that. So he said, what would happen if they tried to break up one of his speeches? And he said, wasn't it terrible when they did that to Bernie Sanders? He let these two loud women escort him off the stage, take his mic. He said he showed it that he's so weak. He said, I can tell you, they're not taking my mic. I don't know whether the fighting would be done by me personally or by people who work for me. They're not taking my mic.
Yeah, and that's
a— Everybody cheered, of course.
Yeah, that's a very popular position.
Yeah, of course it is.
I mean, especially given that they even disrupt Bernie Sanders. I mean, you can't just have your own event. We don't disrupt things, right? I mean, we have our event. People listen to us. We have the internet. The whole world can listen to us. But somebody's giving a speech. Like, I remember as an undergrad, everybody who came to give a speech was a rotten jerk that I would have hated to listen to, but it never dawned on me to make an ass out of myself. Whereas when we would have one guy show up, one person who was different from what everybody would be hearing at Harvard, well, there were demonstrations and screaming and people making idiots out of themselves. It's a totalitarian impulse that I cannot allow the expression of any opinion that is different from mine without my alerting the world, which of course is awaiting your pronouncement with bated breath, of my objection to it. It's just horrifying.
Now, and of course, a violation of property rights, too.
And that, too.
And manners.
And manners. And of course, Bernie Sanders was a complete pushover about the whole thing. Well, gee, I'm sorry you don't want to hear what I have to say. You know, stand up for yourself, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, give me a break. I mean, there was that. What an opportunity he had to give a rip-roaring speech there, and he just folded completely, just pathetic.
Orrin Martin O'Malley cringed and had to apologize for saying all lives matter.
Yeah, I'm deeply sorry for saying that all lives matter, because I should understand that in this context. I should understand the context. Yeah, and anyway, yeah, and of course, it's only we could do a whole episode on Black Lives Matter. Let's talk about, is Trump going to have any electoral success?
Well, I think he's likely to be the nominee. I think he's likely to be the president.
Really?
And in fact, I've thought that from the very beginning. Well, because he clearly lit a prairie fire. I mean, from the very beginning from his announcement, he plugged in the population. I mean, just everybody was riveted. And, and the polls have shown it. I must say, I thought that Fox made a very bad mistake in going after him. And of course, Fox, which has been going from strength to strength, beating all the other cable channels, high ratings and so forth, was their first big stumble. And they've, in effect, had to apologize to him. And we'll see what happens to Megyn Kelly and those other creeps who were the so-called moderators. But I think people like him. And it's true that he's bombastic. Although Eric Erickson, of all people, once wrote an article, and he said, I can't stand, he said, politicians are virtually always very different in private than in public. I must say Ron Paul is the one exception to that rule. I'm saying that, not Eric Erickson. But he said, for example, Rick Perry is very, very nasty to the people who work for him and who can't respond. I mean, just very, very nasty. He said, I could have no respect for him after I saw that. He said, Donald Trump is the sweetest employer in the world. He said, he's very, very nice. He's calm. He's quiet. And his employees all love him, and he's very, very nice to them. And he said it's too bad that people will never see that actual personality of his in public, because, of course, he has a very different public persona, a TV persona.
It's interesting that you say this, that you make this kind of prediction, because, of course, the mainstream media has had exactly the opposite view since the beginning, that he's not going to accomplish this, he's not going to get to this
threshold. Stated in every single article.
Yeah.
Says this.
And then he'll never get to this threshold or accomplish this or jump over this hurdle. And I remember when I saw the New York Post say that Donald Trump is toast after he insulted what someone later called St. John McCain. And I thought to myself, look, I'm not even the most astute political observer in America, and I know for a fact that is not going to finish him off. And of course, I was right. I was totally right. And the New York Post was completely wrong. And the fact that they could be so deeply wrong, I mean, it's not like he went down 10 points, but he's still ahead. He didn't go down, as far as I can see. He's still doing great. It shows how utterly disconnected. The fact that people like the people at the Post thought they could trot out Jeb Bush and Scott Walker and keep the masses satisfied is deeply revealing. Now, on the other hand, when Scott Walker drops out, Bush drops out, are those people going to go to Trump, or are they going to look for another? These seem like the safe people. Aren't the safe people going to go to Kasich or something?
Well, we've still got a while to go, but of course, they. You know, you made the same point about Tim Pawlenty. They're all saying, "Hey, look at Kasich. He's going up. He's amazing. He's exciting the crowds." It's not. Of course, it's not true.
No,
he's another very, very boring guy going nowhere. And so I don't know. Will they try to bring somebody else in? Who knows what they're going to try to do to Trump? Sometimes terrible things have happened to people who threaten the establishment in the way he's threatening them. So we sort of can't know about that sort of thing. These are very bad people. They are in a situation where one line in the Federal Register can take billions of dollars from somebody or give billions of dollars to somebody. And of course, in a system like that, there's so much at stake. And it's like the mafia. I don't mean to impugn the mafia, but the government has similarities to the mafia. But I think as long as his health is good, as long as he keeps it up, I think more and more people are going to come to him. By the way, talk about something that's not being emphasized. Democrats love Trump. Working class, especially Democrats, love Trump.
Yeah.
A group that the Democrats have never been able to get in recent years. So I think he's much bigger than the Republican Party. He's put the Republican Party in the shade. All the operatives, the political consultants, all the other politicians, they've all shrunk to tiny size. He's got an outsized personality, and apparently people like that. He's a very American figure. He could never go anywhere and say British politics. He really taps into something that was noticeable about America in the 19th century too. This sort of businessman, people admire him, and all the talk of class warfare and envy and that sort of thing. Nobody feels that way towards Donald Trump. They admire him as a successful businessman. They think and they like his flash and his. I must say, a lot of that's not to my style either. He really taps into what people want. People are also he's. Talking about issues that have been suppressed for decades, that have not been allowed to discuss, and all of a sudden he wipes away all the political correctness. Now everybody can discuss immigration, whereas it never could be discussed before. And on the subject of immigration, I just want to, and maybe you'll link to these too, but there are two great HAPA articles on why if we had a private property order, if we had a society, a libertarian society, where everything is private property, there could be no involuntary immigration. All immigration, like all trade, would have to be voluntary. And so that clearly should be the ideal. And the idea that you can just bring the entire world here, people who are a lot of them go on welfare, get affirmative action, get public schools and all kinds of other government so-called services at the expense of the taxpayers, trample on other people's private property, vote themselves other people's property. The idea that the current property owners and taxpayers, whether it's in Italy or Britain or France or the United States, this is, of course, a worldwide problem, should not be able to say anything, that it's politically correct not to like this. He wiped it away, just boom, just snap, with his announcement, just gone. And they predicted, of course, after his announcement, well, he's gone, he's dead. You can't criticize mass immigration without being a racist and a bum and a fascist,
right?
Whatever.
And of course, what they want, they normally want an issue like that to be, as with all major issues, something that both parties agree on, so that it's never ever raised in a debate.
That's right.
You can't talk about this, and there's a whole laundry list. That's what this whole show is about. Whole laundry list of things that the Democrats, Republicans will agree on, so they will not be brought up. So whether it's, you know, I don't know where Trump stood on the
bank
bailouts.
This is your 3x5 card.
Yeah, the three. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that, you're right. I mean, that's for, and you know, by the way, I think, and this is just a gut instinct, but I think, maybe because of his war on political correctness, I think Trump in a head-to-head match with Hillary or whoever the Democrat is, I think he would actually do much better among American blacks than any GOP candidate in recent memory. Do you have that same instinct?
You know, this is the only candidate actually capable of reaching out to the black community.
Yeah.
Black people like his style, just like white people like his style. More to the point, black people don't like mass immigration. They hate mass immigration. There was a time when Jesse Jackson, before he got paid off, used to hold rallies at the Mexican-American border denouncing the immigration as taking black jobs. So I think there's no question he's going to get a very significant number of black votes. I would also predict a significant number of Hispanic votes. Already the polls show he gets about 25% of the Hispanic vote. Now, why isn't that a huge news item? Because, of course, what this means is the people who are workers, who are settled here, who jump through all the hoops, don't like the idea of a lot of bums, welfare bums, coming in and being given all kinds of privileges. They don't like that any more than anybody else likes it. So absolutely, Trump will get some huge, from a Republican standpoint, huge percentage of the black vote. He's already beating Hillary in the polls in North Carolina. He's climbing up against her in all the other polls. And I was thrilled to see a poll today that he's beating Rubio and Bush in Florida. So it's in their home state of Florida. Both these guys, of course, very boring. Rubio also, may I say something politically incorrect, extremely stupid. And I know this not only from observing him, but from people who've had dealings with him. This guy's a boob, but we're supposed to hail him and think that he's just America's future.
Well, one more thing on this. The way the GOP normally tries to engage in outreach to the black community or say, ever since Jack Kemp, I'm going to be the candidate who reaches out to the black community, it's always with some list of wonkish proposals that no one is interested in. You know, I'll bring enterprise zones to your community or whatever. I don't even know what you're talking about. Whereas just a plain spoken guy, I think, would have vastly more success than anybody showing up with his wonkish policy papers. I mean, really, they've been so utterly inept in doing this.
But look at the candidates who, for example, think that the way to reach out to the black community is to go to Ferguson. You know what? The rioters, the burglars, the looters and so forth, why do they do that? The people Trump appeals to are the people who have jobs, who have families, who have homes, who have a stake in the community, are very concerned about the future, and they're concerned about, of course, the black unemployment rate. So Trump says he's going to do something about that. I'm not in favor of what he wants to do. But that is a very, very powerful – jobs, a very, very powerful political issue to the vast majority of the black community that actually like to work or do have jobs and want to keep their jobs. It doesn't appeal to the welfare bums who are shooting people in Ferguson. But you know what? That's okay. And the guys who went to Ferguson and tried to make a moral issue out of isn't it terrible that people in Ferguson are being maltreated because they're not allowed to loot? That doesn't work. It doesn't work with black people. It doesn't work with white people. It doesn't work with anybody else.
And I mean, as I say, it's been tried again and again, and the results are terrible. So they think if I just try this harder, if I do three times as much of this, I'll get three times the results. And you do, three times zero. It doesn't do anything.
Well, I know black people who talk about these, you know, enterprise zones that Jack Kemp promoted.
Yeah.
We have other candidates promoting that. They know that if there's an enterprise zone set up, the people who are going to get the benefits are going to be the cronies. They're not going to be people in the area. Whatever tax or other kind of regulatory benefits go, people who are going to bring in a factory or whatever, will be cronies. The people with pull with the government. They're not going to be regular people. They know, And so all this stuff is, of course, even worse than wonkish. And you can't, you know, so what if somebody has a big policy paper? Nobody pays attention. Trump said the other day to Chuck Todd, who wanted to know why he didn't have 75 policy papers on things. He said, you know, Chuck, the people don't care about policy papers. Voters don't care about policy papers. It's just you people in the media. Well, of course, that's entirely right. And they want it so they can go through him and hang him. That's the purpose.
Right, right. And of course, you know, I'm sure Ron had some kind of policy paper, but it would be like one sentence.
No, of course.
This thing needs to be abolished. That's my policy. What else do you need to know?
You know, he would write columns and so forth. He never had a policy paper.
Yeah, yeah, right. Because there's the whole thing reeks of government and reeks of, I got my degree in government from such and such university, so now here's how I'm going to try to change society and all that. I mean, every single one of these things winds up in the trash can. Every policy paper from every wonkish institute winds up in the trash can. We all know that. That's why the Mises Institute doesn't write policy papers, not only because they're ineffective and stupid, but because the premise on which it's based is that the government basically has control over people's lives and property. We're going to try to figure out how it ought to exercise that power, maybe with a little bit of a nod in the direction of freedom. No. We think in a whole different paradigm. Well, I want to urge go ahead.
I mentioned just one last thing.
Please do.
Another thing Trump has done, he's gotten rid of all the Beltway think tanks. I mean, they all still exist, but nobody cares about them. Nobody thinks about them. Everybody ignores them. Heritage, Cato, AEI, Brookings, and so forth. All these places that make vast sums of money putting out policy papers. Nobody reads them. Nobody cares about them. And now probably their buildings are all a couple of stories shorter because of Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So, I mean, there definitely are silver linings here. As I say, you know, neither of us wants to see a victor in this terrible race, you know, in general, in elections in general, because we never get anything good out of it. But there are some good consequences.
But if he brings down the establishment, if he wounds the establishment, hurts the establishment, that's to the benefit of every decent person in this country.
Exactly,
and
right.
Every decent person in the world.
Exactly. He has embarrassed the establishment. Because everybody knows the establishment and Jeb Bush are in cahoots. Like, that's the guy you were supposed to support. And he is making a laughingstock out of him. It seems to me everybody has to be happy about that. If you're not happy about that, go have your head examined, because this is a happy moment. Well, I'll also, while you're in the waiting room to have your head examined, check out Lou Rockwell's political theater blog. Go to lourockwell.com, and where you see political theater, click on that, because of Lou's two blogs, this is the one that Lou writes exclusively. No one else contributes to that, and it's just Lou's commentary and links all day, every day, about what's going on in the race, and it's a lot of fun to read. If you have to endure an election, you might as well get some enjoyment and entertainment out of it through and education through Lou Rockwell's political theater. Well, Lou, it's been fun, as I knew it would be. Thanks so much.
Tom, thanks a million.
All right, everybody, let me tell you about an ebook I'm going to be working on that I hope to have out for you at the end of next month, that is September 2015. And that is an ebook that I am tentatively entitling Bernie Sanders is Wrong on Everything. And I think that's very similar to or exactly the same as a Grant Phillips article title, but I would have used this title anyway. Honest to goodness, this title is just begging to be used. So we'll go through the major planks of what Bernie Sanders is calling for, and I'll have a chapter on each one and refuting it, and it'll be great. It'll be free. So if you listen to the show, you'll know exactly how to get it. Of course, you can get my most recent free ebook, 14 Hard Questions for Libertarians Answered, by simply texting the word liberty to 33444. So watch for that free ebook next month. Another great episode tomorrow. Stephen Walt of Harvard University joins me. He is the co-author of the famous or perhaps infamous book, The Israel Lobby. So always fun here on the show. Make sure and subscribe, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.